Ladies, gentlemen, listeners, both Nick and I feel deeply honoured tonight because this evening the BBC has decided that our show, the Million Pound Radio Show, should be cancelled.
And in its place, you'll be hearing the annual Ronald Ambrose Memorial Lecture, the prestigious radio lecture, which this year is being recorded in Geneva before a distinguished audience of royalty, dignitaries, politicians, broadcasting executives, and one very pushy Jehovah's Witness.
Now, for those of you who may be unaware of the broadcasting giant that this lecture is named after, the lecture will be preceded now by a short biography of Ronald Ambrose.
Ronald Ambrose spent over 50 years in broadcasting. He began at the BBC in 1932. He was a bright, rather engaging man with a fine brain and a sharp wit and a bottom like a peach, and so promotion soon beckoned. In 1935, Ambrose became a radio producer, and in 1936, he was the producer of King Edward VIII's famous abdication speech.
And so, it is with the deepest sense of personal regret that I must tell you that I have this day decided to imprison the government, make Wallace Simpson queen, and have Baldwin beheaded. I'm the king. I can do what I bloody well like. How was that, Ambrose?
Not bad for a rehearsal, Your Majesty. If I may, I'd like to suggest a couple of tiny tweaks to the script.
Remarkably, Ambrose persuaded King Edward to abdicate on the grounds that it would make more interesting radio. Ambrose was a confident young producer. He covered the 1936 Olympics, where he persuaded Hitler to drop a speech about Lebensraum and do knock-knock jokes instead. When war came, Ambrose was put in charge of the Prime Minister's broadcasts.
Never in the field of human conflict has so much been owed by so many to so few.
Basically, that's how you do it, Mr. Churchill.
Use me normal voice!
After the war, Ambrose was put in charge of children's programs. It was a difficult time for children's programs. They were still feeling the shockwaves from the Muffin the Mule sex scandal. But Ambrose brought us new characters, new presenters, including Penelope Hunter Forbes, who on June the 9th, 1956, made an unforgettable broadcast.
Hello, children, everywhere. What story do you want to hear today? I know a good story. It's a story of a woman called Penelope, just like me, who worked for the BBC for years and years and years. And then one day she went into work and she was told she wasn't needed anymore. Thank you. That wasn't very nice, was it, children? But do you know what Penelope did? She went on children's programs, live, and said, bum. Scrotum. And lots of other rude words that were banned on the BBC by that silly old plonker, Lord Reed.
In the scuffle that followed, Ambrose had a finger bitten off, and Penelope Hunter Forbes' suicide, live on air, proved a bit of a setback for Ambrose's career. As did her bitter parting cry of, Ronald Ambrose is useless in bed. He was suspended and sent to BBC Northern Ireland. But he left in 1964 in the wake of the controversy over his new music show, The Reverend Ian Paisley Sings Country. He came back to London to television. Ambrose had no experience of making TV, so he quickly rose to Director General. Of course, like anyone, Ambrose did not escape the occasional lapse of judgment, like his decision that the commentator at Winston Churchill's funeral should be Murray Walker.
And out in front, it's the gun carriage bearing Churchill's coffin, followed by the Guard of Honour. And there comes the immediate family, and right behind them, it's the Duke of Edinburgh, looking relaxed on a black horse.
But all in all, Ambrose was to prove an innovative Director General. He pioneered the use of weathermen with silly regional accents and was the first man to spot the talent of Debbie Greenwood, Indeed, he remains, to this day, the first man to spot the tank with Debbie Green. In 1982, Ronald Ambrose retired and was made a lord. On March the 4th, 1983, he died in his seat in the House of Lords. In 1984, someone noticed. A memorial service was held at St. Martin in the Fields. His family and friends gathered to hear Ambrose's favourite psalm, Psalm 23, read by Murray Walker.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
It was a reading that left a deep impression on all who heard it. In 1985, in recognition of Ronald Ambrose's life work, the BBC introduced the annual Ambrose Lecture. Previous lecturers include David Attenborough with his famous discourse arguing that locusts are merely fanatical vegetarians who are making a point. And of course, last year, economist Milton Friedman put the case for market forces and also proposed that small orphans should be sold as novelty doorstops. But this year's Ambrose lecturer is Nobel Prize-winning physicist Sylvia DuPont.
Tonight, I intend to disprove many of the scientific assumptions we now make. I will prove that there is no such thing as gravity. When we drop an object, the ground simply leaps up to catch it. I have discovered that as well as protons, neutrons, and electrons, there is another subatomic particle, the sodtron, a particle of extraordinary power and cussedness. This particle is found throughout the physical universe, but especially in G-plan furniture. The sodtron is responsible for that most immutable of physical laws, namely when two objects are supposed to fit together, they won't. The sodtron is that most dangerous of all phenomena, an atomic particle with a sense of humor. But let us begin at the basics, the atomic composition of our universe. Now, this is a particle accelerator, and with the aid of modern sound technology, we can, for the first time, hear the sound of particles being accelerated. Right, if I slowly turn up the microphone.
Whee!
Oh!
Whee! Are you positively charged or negatively charged, then? Oh, depends on my mood, really. Are you antimatter?
No, I'm pro-matter. I think matter matters. What sort of particles are they over there?
Well, they're protons, they're electrons.
Chill, 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 chill.
And they're morons.
What's that tiny, tiny, infinitesimally small subatomic particle over there?
That's a Moynihan. Of dance.
Slam dancing.
Oh.
You just sort of bounce around, bashing into all the other atomic particles and just see what happens. Ready?
Okay.
Well, I'm afraid we've had to leave that live transmission from Geneva due to the unforeseen nuclear annihilation of Switzerland. So in its place, here's the Million Pound Radio Show. It's time for the Million Pound Radio Show, and here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good evening. This week we'll be looking at the free elections in the Soviet Union, which have ground to a halt. Apparently, voters are convinced that being given a choice of candidates is some sort of KGB trap.
And we'll be discussing media bias with that right-wing git, Norman Tebbit.
Mr. Tebbit, Andy's the short one with the beard, okay? Well, Andy, have you had a good week, then?
Not bad. Oh.
What's the matter, mate? You okay?
No, I feel terrible, actually. I think I've got that flu.
Oh, what, that Chinese flu?
No, they discovered a new one now called That Flu.
Ah.
It comes from a small town in Thailand called That, apparently. Yeah. Oh, I'm kind of quite feverish, mate.
Well, perhaps you'd better lie down.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind, yeah.
Go ahead, I'll cover for you.
Great, okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Tell me, Andy, what have you been up to this week?
Well, Nick, not much, really. Then again, I never do very much, you know.
No.
Nick, I wish I had your glamorous and exciting lifestyle.
Well, Andy,
you're so charismatic, Nick. I mean, wherever you go becomes the place to be, doesn't it? Admit it. I mean, I wish I just had your star quality, sexual magnetism, not to mention your sheer talent.
Oh, stop it, Andy. You're embarrassing me.
Well, maybe, Nick, but
Nick,
it just...
Nick.
What?
I don't actually talk like that.
Yes, you do.
I do not talk in that nauseating, adenoidal cockney drone.
Who did that?
I did.
Sorry, Andy, I didn't think it could have been you. Because it sounded like someone with a nauseating, adenoidal cockney drone.
Ah.
What's the matter? You're right. You seem in pain. You okay, mate?
Oh, yeah. I had an operation last Tuesday.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you see, I had these terrible stomach pains in the week, you know. So I went to see my GP.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, Mr. Hamilton, I'm afraid it's acute appendicitis.
Oh, right. Ah!
We don't want it bursting. That could be very serious. So we'll get you to hospital immediately and have the appendix removed, okay?
Yeah, anything to stop the pain.
I'll send for an ambulance straight away. What sort of ambulance would you like?
Sorry?
Oh, we now offer a choice of ambulances to the patient as part of Kenneth Clark's new look consumer responsive health service. Have a look at these brochures. As you can see, at the top of the range is the executive ambulance. Tasteful interiors, super smooth suspension, stereo, three nurses, fax machine. And there's the standard ambulance and the economy ambulance.
What's that?
Oh, minicab with reclining seats. I'll
take the standard ambulance.
One standard ambulance. Okay, and where are you going?
Hospital!
Yes, but which one? Here's the catalogue.
Oh, any hospital. This one.
Guys, are you sure?
Yes.
That's wonderful. You just won me a free holiday. The 50th abdominal patient I sent to Guy's this month. Have a glass of champagne.
So did you get to Guy's?
Yes, that was just as much an ordeal. I could hardly speak with the pain. Oh!
All right, Mr. Hamilton. Soon be over. Just another 5 videos to watch.
Hi, my name is Dr. Ralph Morgan. I'm a surgeon, and hey, I'd really like to take out your appendix. Remember,
let Ralph Morgan treat your organs. You can trust his scalpel's trust.
He'll do fine.
So who did you go for then?
Dr. Morgan, he was very good, you know. He kept me conscious during the op because he said he likes to keep the customer fully informed,
you
know.
I see.
Yeah, he sewed his card into my duodenum for future reference, you know.
That's handy.
I was out for hours after the op till I was woken by the street cries.
Street cries?
Outside the hospital.
Who will buy?
Oh, what's that?
Who will buy? Who will buy my spleen and my kidney?
My GP's very efficient, you know, since he got this fast service checkup counter, you know, with a big sign. 5 symptoms or less.
Oh,
you
right. Through my if I may, I'd like to change the tone now, be very serious, because those of us who can speak and communicate easily ought always to stop and spare a thought for those who have great difficulty communicating. Now, Leslie Harris, you're a speech therapist.
That's right.
And how long have you worked here at the House of Commons?
Well, some years. It's an environment where simple human communication is very difficult.
Of course. Yes, perhaps we could meet some of your patients.
Certainly. In here we have Roy Hattersley. We're trying to teach Roy to avoid words which include the problem letters BLP and, of course, S. It's very difficult for him because he has to talk about balance of payments deficit.
Balance of payments deficit?
Yes. All right, Roy. And retail prices.
Retail prices.
And long-term pressures on sterling.
Pressures on sterling.
Avoiding the torrential S sound is what we're concentrating on at the moment. But it's not helped, of course, by Roy's tendency to witter on endlessly about his hometown of Sheffield.
Sheffield, specifically speaking.
God, sorry about that. And then I've got a cloth.
No,
sorry.
It's okay. It'll come off right now. Now, I noticed Neil Kinnock is receiving some tuition.
That's right. Of course, Neil has a verbal tic whereby he always uses 2 adjectives together in a way that is both...
repetitive and redundant.
Like that.
Pointless and pathetic.
How's it coming along?
Well, not bad. If I just hypnotise him with this picture of number 10 Downing Street... Okay, Neil, listen to me. You will now construct a sentence which ends on 1 simple effective adjective, okay?
The government policy on health It's senseless.
Good.
I'm stupid.
Still a bit of a way to go, I'm afraid. Now, in this room here, we have a very sad case. This man is an ex-STP MP who's joined Paddy Ashdown's Social and Liberal Democrats.
I'm a member of the SDP.
No, try again.
I am a member of the SDLP.
No.
I am a member of the SDL. The SLP. The PLS. The PLO. The PDO. The GDO.
Now this is very... USP. This is very sad. You mean he can't remember the name of the merged party he's in?
No, mind you, neither can anyone else. And through here, we have those with acute speech problems, like Colin Moynihan. Where is he? Colin Moynihan should be in here.
Mr. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Leslie. I think I've just trodden on him. Sorry, Minister. I'll just scrape you off there. Sorry.
And over here, we have Sir Geoffrey Howe.
Don't hit me.
It's okay. Cabinet's over. Sir Geoffrey is trying to put some dynamism into his speaking voice.
I am Sir Geoffrey Howe. That's not too dynamic, is it?
No, you let your hair down, Sir Geoffrey.
Yes, you do come across as terribly sort of harmless, Sir Geoffrey. I don't know why it
really?
Is, but whenever I see you, I'm always reminded of Paddington Bear.
Really?
Yes, I don't know why. Perhaps if you put down that marmalade sandwich.
Now, in here is the most dangerous and risky work we do. Metaphor therapy.
Metaphor therapy, right.
Tony here is a backbench Tory MP. Tony, perhaps you'd like to try a metaphor?
The opposition's argument is very like an iceberg. 1/10 visible, 9/10 invisible.
Good.
And like an iceberg, it is very dangerous, slippery and cold, and dotted with penguins. It is pointed.
Oh, my gosh, he's trapped inside an iceberg metaphor.
It's big, and it's white, and it's a hazard to shipping.
Oh, it took him 4 days to get out of one of these once. Press an alarm, quick.
You can find it on the North Pole or on the North Pole.
Emergency teams will be here in a second. They'll have to knock him unconscious. The only way to stop him, let's get outside.
Right. Well, thank you for showing us around, Leslie. Leslie, keep up the good work with these poor handicapped people. And next week we'll be visiting the Occupational Therapy Centre, where people of low IQ are given crayons and paper and asked to design Britain's motorways.
Leslie, I've cracked it. Listen, the government's policy is bad. See?
Excellent, Neil. Well done.
The government policy is bad.
Brilliant.
The government policy is bad and beastly. Oh, bugger!
Thank you, Mr. Kinnock. And now we go live to Ray French at Wembley for the Rugby League Cup final between St. Helens and Hull Kingston Rovers.
Well, I'm near you. Join us here as Hull Kingston Rovers captain Dave Huggett is introducing the Queen Mother to his players. A lot of anticipation in the air, and with our microphones down there on the pitch, we can now listen in on this traditional pre-match ceremony.
This is Stan Applewhite, man.
The very best of luck.
And this is Jeff Addison.
Good luck. I hope you have a good game.
I'll do my best, ma'am, under the circumstances.
Sorry?
Well, you see, ma'am, the wife left me last Tuesday, and she's taken the kids.
Addison, let go of Her Majesty's hand.
You don't mind me telling this, do you, Ma? I've always known you're a kind, sympathetic person. You've got a nice face. Everyone says so.
Thank you.
Can't go on like this.
Addison, you're holding up the Rugby League Cup final.
I just keep bursting into tears. Last Saturday in the scrum, I just started blubbing, didn't I, Stan?
It was dreadful, ma'am.
Oh, dear.
And I mean, it's not as if I haven't got enough problems with my arm to worry about, you know? Wife's mother's not been well yet.
Don't you start, Applewhite.
I think it might be an ulcer, but they can't find out on the tests, you know.
Applewhite, shut it. And Addison, put those Valium away. Just sorry. Grip the pair of you. Maybe we can get this ruddy cup final started.
Sorry, sorry, Skipper.
Sorry about that, ma'am.
Please, don't worry.
Yeah, I'm sorry, ma'am, and I hope you enjoy the match.
So do I. Though it won't be easy.
Sorry, ma'am.
Well, I'm very worried about my grandchildren.
Kids are such a worry, aren't they, Mum? Yeah.
Well, there seems to be a bit of a delay here as the Queen Mother and the Hull Kingston Rovers, Jeff Harrison, go down the tunnel together for a cup of tea. So for the time being, back to the studio.
Well, with me now is the recently appointed manager of the England cricket team, Ted Dexter, who's going to announce the England touring party.
The touring body reads as follows. Graham Gooch, Alan Lamb, Graham Hick, Viv Richards, Gordon Greenwich, Imran Khan, Sunil Gavaskar, Jeff Dujon, Gustav Logie, Malcolm Marshall, Kirtley Ambrose, Richard Hadley, and Courtney Walsh.
Quite a few overseas players in this.
Well, we've decided to change the residential qualification slightly. It used to say that a player had to be resident here for 5 years before he could play for England.
And what's the stipulation now?
Well, it helps if they visited England at some point, but it's not essential.
There are hardly any English players in the squad at all.
No, thank goodness.
Can't help noticing the England squad now contains 8 West Indies test players.
Well, why should they have Viv Richards all the time? And Malcolm Marshall and Gordon Greenwich, I mean, it's just not fair, is it? So we're going to have them this time.
Isn't that a bit unfair?
No, not at all. They can have Derek Pringle.
Well, it's obviously going to be an absorbing test series. Over to you, Andy.
Right, well, with me now is Bobby Robson, the England football manager.
We were unlucky.
No, actually, Bobby, I'll...
And don't forget, Tibet, they're a very useful side. No. Improving all the time.
Actually, Bobby, I was going to ask you what you thought of the selection procedure there for the England cricket team.
Well, it's all wrong, isn't it? I mean, I can only pick Englishmen, can't I? I mean, I can't have Diego Maradona in the England football team, can I?
Of course not.
God knows I've tried. It's convincing the FA to go along with it. I'm sure we could swing it, just stick Diego in a wig and pass him off as Chrissy Waddle. Of course, Diego would have to go on a few pointless dribbles so that no one suspected anything. But I'm sure it could work. But no, Bobby, this day, they're real stick in the mud.
Thank you, Bobby.
It was the same when I suggested snowpaking Ruud Gullit, shaving his head and passing him off as Terry Butcher.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Bobby. And now I understand we can go live to the NEC Birmingham to Reg Guthridge.
Well, you join us here after a quite sensational fight. With me I have Cliff Thunderfist Smith. Cliff, amazing fight. Talk us through the closing moments.
Well, I had him against the ropes, and I caught him with a left, and I feel his legs buckle, so I goes for the body, and he started to go, and then I thought, why?
Why?
Yeah, why? I was overwhelmed by the sheer futility of violence, you know? So I stopped fighting and started advocating the teachings of Mahatma Gandhi.
And that's when he knocked you out?
Yeah.
Do you think Gandhi's a good model for a young boxer?
Well, I think passive resistance can work for a boxer. But obviously, it like, puts a lot more pressure on the quality of your footwork, you know.
Cliff, are you still keen to go for the title?
Oh, absolutely. I think it would be good for boxing's image to have a champion who's a pacifist, you know.
Wasn't Joe Bugner a pacifist?
No, he just never used to hit nobody.
Andy?
Well, more sports news coming in. The Grand National has been cancelled. Apparently, the horses have worked out that there's nothing in it for them. But now I understand we can go back to the Rugby League Cup final for some live action.
Well, Andy, you join us back here at Wembley for some quite sensational developments. It's incredible, the first Rugby League Cup final I've ever seen where all 26 players have sat down for a counselling session with the Queen Mother.
Well, thank you, Ray.
Andy,
what?
Can you get a move on? Only I've got to get to this retail warehouse in Islington.
Well, it's not very far. Don't panic. You came in by car, didn't you?
Yeah, but I parked the car in Wimbledon.
You knew you were headed for Islington, so you parked the car 15 miles away in Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I saw a parking space.
Actually, I'm in a bit of a hurry as well. I've got a voiceover to record for an ad tonight.
Oh, yeah? What's the ad for?
Oh, it's the latest government share issue.
Eh? Mm. What, like British Telecom, British Gas? What's this one?
British Dead.
British Dead?
Yeah, they're selling off all the graveyards, you know. It's an idea they got from Westminster Council. Oh, yeah. Should be very lucrative, Nick. Developers can either build on them or use them as high-quality farmland, you know, very good growing soil, you know. And it's a great voiceover I do, and it's the first voiceover I've ever been asked to do. They said my voice was perfect for it.
Yeah, what character do you play?
A corpse.
Join us now in another journey into the unknown in our series Tales of the Impossible, Episode 2 of The Man Who Always Chose Wrongly.
My personal nightmare was getting worse. It now seemed impossible for me to ever make the right choice. I looked at my watch and realized I was running late. If I didn't hurry, I'd be late for work. So I decided to take the M25. 4 days later, I arrived.
Wilson, I wanted a word with you. You ordered a new fleet of cars for our nationwide sales staff.
Yes, sir, they should have arrived.
Oh, they've arrived, Wilson. They're in the car park. 120 Sinclair C5. You're fired. Clear desk and go.
It was a depressing drive home. I reflected on all the jobs I'd been unable to hold down recently. The job as image consultant to Nicholas Ridley. As tax advisor to Lester Pickett. Treasurer at Barlow Clowes. Executive in charge of long-term planning at Eddie Shah Newspapers. Safety officer at Chernobyl. National organizer of the Kurt Waldheim is Innocent campaign. Perhaps my judgment was at fault. When I got home, I relaxed on my foam-filled sofa and decided to watch a video. But which video to choose? I had so many, all on Betamax. There was Ben Johnson's Great Sporting Moments video, the Best of Little and Large, the Eddie Edwards Skiing Masterclass. In the end, I decided to watch Sky TV instead. And then suddenly, I remembered my date with Fiona. I'd met her when I went to complain about the noise at a local party the Hell's Angels were holding. When I came round in the hospital, Fiona was giving me the transfusion. We struck up a relationship and she'd agreed to meet me for a date. I needed to dress to impress and spend a long time ironing my best lime green shirt and stripy crimpling flares. And as I parked the Skoda, I saw Fiona waiting for me on the other side of the road. Hi, Fiona.
Hi.
I hope the restaurant's okay. I wanted something impressive, but not too pretentious.
Fine.
Yes, are you ready to order?
I'll just have a Big Mac.
And I'll have the soft cheese and egg chicken burger, please. It was an exciting date for me. Fiona had a steady boyfriend already, an American, a boxer. By the name of Bison or Fison or...
Look, that's Mike Tyson.
That was it, Tyson. When I came round in the hospital, I reflected on how stupid I'd been. Surely there was some way out of this terrible nightmare for me. Perhaps if I had a break, a long holiday. As I stepped off the plane, I felt great. Checked into my hotel, got changed, and went out exploring. I was feeling buoyant and was wearing bright colours to reflect my mood. Orange T-shirt, Union Jack shorts, and Union Jack sun hat. A local greeted me.
You're new to the Falls Road, aren't you?
He seemed rather unfriendly. So I decided to break the ice with a very funny joke I knew about the Pope. When I came round in the hospital, I reflected that I'd done it again. Would I always be the man who always chose wrongly?
Don't miss next week's episode when Charles Wilson accepts a job as Penguin Vikings representative in Tehran. In The Man Who Always Chose Wrongly.
And finally, some political news, Justin. Mrs. Thatcher has announced a new role for Colin Moynihan. She's going to drill some holes in his head and use him as a salt cellar. Good night.
Thank you. Good night. The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Jasper Jacobs. It was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.